this is Dana Gardner, Principal Analyst at Inner Arbor Solutions, and you're listening to Briefings Direct. Today we present a sponsored podcast discussion on the huge movement we're seeing around enterprise data centers. Many enterprises, if not nearly all, are involved nowadays with some level of data center transformation, either in the planning stages or in outright execution. The heightened activity runs the gamut from retrofitting and designing new data centers to then building and occupying them. We're seeing many instances where numerous data centers are being consolidated into a powerful core few, as well as completely new greenfield data centers with modern design and facilities coming online for service providers of new and restructuring industries, as well as in new geographies where growth is being very important to them. These are by no means trivial projects, and they often involve a tremendous amount of planning and affect IT and facilities and the energy planners, as well as the business leadership and line of business managers as well. The payoffs are potentially huge, as we'll see, from doing data center design properly, but the risks are also quite high if things don't come out as planned. The latest definitions of data centers focus on being what's called fit for purpose, of using best practices and assessments of existing assets and then correctly projecting future requirements to get that data center just right, productive, flexible, efficient, and well understood and managed. So today we're going to examine the life cycle of data center design and fulfillment through migration and learn about some of the payoffs when this goes as planned. We're going to learn more about a successful project at Valero Energy Corporation. The goal through these complex undertakings at these data centers is really to radically improve how IT can deliver its services and be modern, efficient, and flexible. So we're here with two executives from Hewlett-Packard to look at proper planning and data center design, as well as build-out migration, and we'll learn from an IT leader at Valero how they manage their project. So please join me in welcoming our guest today. We're here with Cliff Moore, America's PMO lead for Critical Facilities Consulting at HP. Welcome to the show, Cliff.
Thanks, Dana.
We're also here with John Bennett, Worldwide Director of Data Center Transformation Solutions at HP. Hello, John.
Hi, Dana. Welcome back.
Thank you. And we're also here with John Vann, Vice President of Technical Infrastructure and Operations at Valero Energy Corporation. Welcome to the show, John.
Hello, Dana. Thanks a lot.
Well, let's go to you, if you don't mind, John Bennett, first. Tell us a little bit about why data center transformation is at an inception point with where data centers are in terms of their history and what the new requirements. It seems to be a somewhat of a perfect storm in terms of the need to move, that staying still nowadays is really not acceptable.
I think you're right on that front, and I find it just fascinating that if you had spoken, 4 years ago, if you had dared suggest that energy and power and cooling and facilities and building were going to be a dominant topic and have dominant share of mind with CIOs, you'd have been laughed at. Yet that's definitely the case today. And it goes back to the point you made about IT being modern and efficient. Data center transformation, as we've spoken before, is really about not only significantly reducing costs to an organization, not only helping them shift their spending away from management and maintenance and into business projects and priorities, but also helping them address the rising cost of energy, the rising consumption of energy, and the mandate to be green or sustainable. And the issues that organizations have in trying to address those mandates, of course, is that the legacy infrastructure and environments they have, the applications portfolio, the facilities, et cetera, all hinder their ability to execute on the things they would like to do. And so data center transformation tries to take a step back, assess what is the data center strategy and the infrastructure strategy that's appropriate for a business, and then how do you get from here to there? How do you go from where you are today to where you need to be? Now, it turns out that, one of the things that gets in the way, both from a cost perspective and from a supporting the business perspective, is the data centers themselves. Customers can find themselves, as HP did, having a very large number of data centers. We had 85. around the world because we grew through acquisition. We grew organically. We had data centers for individual lines of business. We had data centers for individual countries and regions. And when you add it up, we have 85 facilities and innumerable server rooms, all of them requiring administrative staff and data center managers and a lot of overhead. And as part of our own IT transformation effort, we brought that down to 6. You have organizations who discover that the data centers they have are not capable of meeting their future needs. One WAG has characterized this as the $50 million server, where, you know, you keep needing to grow and support the business, and all of a sudden you discover you're bursting at the seams. Or you can be, people based in California or the UK who, you know, the energy supply they have today is all they'll ever have in their data center. And if they have to support business growth, they're going to have to deal with it by addressing both their infrastructure strategies, but probably also by addressing their facilities. And so that's where facilities just really come into the equation and have become a top-of-mind issue for CIOs and IT executives around the world.
You know, John, it also strikes me that the timing is good given the economic cycle, because the commercial market for land and facilities is a buyer's market. That doesn't always happen, especially if you have, you know, capacity issues that you don't always get a chance to pick when you get a need to rebuild. And then, of course, money is cheap nowadays, too, if the capital markets
if you can get to it, right?
if the capital markets are open, they're open for short interest.
I don't know
the
about
economy.
Well, we certainly see and hope to see signs of recovery here. I think data center location is an interesting conversation because of some of the factors you named. One of the things that is different today than even just 10 years ago is that the power and networking infrastructure available around the world is so phenomenal that there's no need to locate data centers close to corporate headquarters. You may choose to do it, but you now have the option to locate data centers in, you know, places like Iceland, because you might be attracted to the natural heating of their environment. Of course, you might have volcano risk. You have people attracted to very boring places like the center of the United States, which don't have earthquakes and hurricanes and wildfires and things that might affect facilities themselves. Or, of course, as I think you'll discover with John, you can choose to build a data center right in your corporate headquarters, but you have a lot of flexibility in it. The issue is not so much access to capital markets as it is any facilities project is going to have to go through, you know, not just the senior executives of the company, but probably the board of directors. And you'll need a strong business case, because you're going to have to justify it financially. You're going to have to justify it as an opportunity cost. You're going to have to justify it in terms of the ROIs expected in the business as they make choices about how to manage and source funds as well. So, it's a good time from the viewpoint of land being cheap, but it might be a good time in terms of business capital be available. It might not be a good time in terms of investment funds being available, as many banks continue to be reluctant to loan, it appears.
Yeah. Well,
a mixed equation.
We can safely say that the variables now for how you would consider and plan and evaluate are quite different than even just a few years ago.
Certainly true, and it probably would look to Cliff to say more about that, frankly.
All right, let's go to Cliff then. Cliff, what's this notion of fit for purpose, and why do you think that the variables for deciding to move forward with data center transformation and redesign activities is different nowadays? Why are we in a different feel in terms of decisions around these issues?
Thanks, Dana. Well, obviously, there's no such thing as a one-size-fits-all data center. It's just not that way. Every data center is different. The majority of the existing data centers out there today were built 10, 15 years ago when power requirements and densities were a lot lower. It's also estimated that at today's energy costs, the cost of running a server from an energy perspective is going to exceed the cost of actually buying the server. So that's a major consideration. We're also finding that many customers have done no growth modeling whatsoever regarding their space, power, and cooling requirements for the next 5, 10, or 15 years into the future, and that's critical as well. failures. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, the notion of fit for purpose, maybe we should explain that up front for those folks who might not be familiar with it.
I'll toss that one to John real quickly.
Well, you know, fit for purpose, you know, the question, you know, in mind is the strategic one of what is the data center strategy for an organization. In particular, you know, if you think about the business services that are being provided by IT, you know, not only what those business services are, but how they should be sourced. If they are being provided out of entity-owned data centers, how many and where? What's the business continuity strategy for those? And it needs to take into account, as Cliff has highlighted, now, not only what do I need today, but given that buildings typically have an economic life of 15 to 25 years, and IT life cycles, I mean technology life cycles for particular devices are 2 or 3 years, and we have, you know, ongoing significant revolutions in technology itself, for example, as we move from traditional IT devices to fabric infrastructures like converged infrastructure, you have these cycles upon cycles of change taking place, and so the business forecasts drive the strategy, and part of that forecasting will be sizing. And fit for purpose, very simply, is, are the assets I have today capable of meeting my needs today and in my planning horizon? If they are, they're fit for purpose. If they're not, they're unfit for purpose, and I better do something about it.
All right, so we're in a bit of a time warp, Cliff. It seems that if many were built 15 years ago, and we still don't have a sense of where we'll be in 5 or 10 years, we seem to be caught between not fitting in the past but not quite fitting or knowing what the future is. How do you help people smooth that out?
Well, obviously, we've got to find out, first off, you know, what they need, what space, power, cooling is the requirement. But then based on the criticality of their systems and applications, we quickly determine what level of availability is required as well. And this determines the Uptime Institute tier level for the facility. And then we go about helping the client strategize on exactly what kinds of facilities will meet those needs while also meeting the needs of the business that come down from the board. When a customer is looking to spend $20 million, $50 million, or sometimes well over $100 million on a new facility, you've got to make sure that it fits within the strategic plan for the business. And that's exactly what boards of directors are looking for before they'll commit to spending that kind of money.
What does HP bring to the table? How do you start a process like this and make it a life cycle where that end goal and the reduced risk play out to get the big payoffs that those board of directors are interested in?
Well, our group within Critical Facility Services actually come to the table with companies' executives and not only look at what are their space, power, and cooling requirements, but what are the strategies of the business, what are the criticality levels of the various mission-critical applications that they run, what are their plans for the future, what are their mergers and acquisitions plans, and so on and so forth, so that we help them collaboratively to develop that strategy for the next 10 to 15 years for their data center history or future.
Now, it was pointed out earlier that one size doesn't fit all, but from your experience, Cliff, what are the number one or two reasons that you're seeing customers go after a new design for their data center and spend that large sum of money?
Probably the biggest reason we're seeing today, the hot button, is power and cooling. And of course, cooling goes along with power. We see more of that than anything else. People are simply running out of power in their data centers. The facilities today, you know, that were built 5, 10, 15 years ago, just do not support the levels of density in power and cooling that clients are asking for going to the future, especially with blades and higher and higher levels of virtualization.
So that higher density requires more energy to run the servers, more energy to cool them, but you have a higher efficiency, utilization, and productivity at the end result in terms of delivering on the requirements. Is there a way for designing the data center that allows you to cut costs and increase capacity, or are you asking too much of this process?
There certainly are ways to do that. We look at all of those different ways with the client. One of the things we do as part of the strategic plan is help the client determine where are the best locations for their data centers based on the efficiency in gathering free cooling, for instance, from the environment. it was mentioned that Iceland might be a location you would get a lot of free cooling there.
Okay. What are some of the design factors? What are the leading factors that people need to look at? And perhaps you could start to get us a little bit more familiar with Valero and what went on with them in the project that they completed not too long ago.
Well, of course, I'll defer to John for some of that, but the leading factors we're seeing, again, are space, power, and cooling, coupled with what is the tier level requirement, what is the availability requirement for the facility itself. Those are the biggest factors we're seeing. Marching right behind that one is energy efficiency. As I mentioned before, the cost of energy is exorbitant when it comes to running a data center. Some data centers we see out there use the equivalent of half of a nuclear power plant to run. It's very expensive, as I'm sure John would tell you. And one of the things that Valero is accomplishing is lower energy costs as a result of building their own. So,
all right. Well, before we go to Valero, just one last question in the market and some of the drivers. What about globalization? Are we seeing emerging markets where there's going to be many more people online and more IT requirements? Is that a factor as well?
Absolutely.
Well, there's a number of factors at play here, right, Dana? I mean, you have, first of all, an increasing access of Internet. You have an increasing generation of complex information types. I mean, people aren't just posting up text things anymore, but it's pictures and videos, and they're storing those things, which is fueling what we characterize as an information explosion. You know, the forecast for storage and storage consumption over the next 5 to 10 years are just phenomenal. On top of that, you have more and more organizations and businesses providing more and more of their business services through IT-based solutions. So you talked about a perfect storm earlier with regard to the timing for data centers, but we're in most organizations are in a perfect storm today of factors just really driving the need for ongoing investments and growth out of IT. Facilities have got to help them grow, not limit their growth.
Hmm. All right, John Van, you're up. I'm sorry to leave you off on the sidelines there for so long, but tell us a little bit about Valero Energy Corporation and what it is that drove you to bite off this big project in terms of a data center transformation and redesign.
Sure. Thanks a lot, Dana. Just a little bit about Valero. Valero is a Fortune 500-based company in San Antonio, and we're the largest independent refiner in North America. We produce fuel and products from 15 refineries, and we have 9 ethanol plants. We market our products in 44 states with a large distribution network. We're also into alternative fuel with renewables and of course, the largest ethanol producer. And then we have a wind farm up in northern Texas, up around Amarillo, that generates enough power to fuel our McKee refinery. So what drove us to build? We started looking at building in 2005. Valero grew through acquisitions. Our data center, as Cliff and John have mentioned, was no different than others. We began to run into power and space and cooling. Even though we were doing a lot of virtualization, we still couldn't keep up with the growth. And we looked at remodeling and also expanding, but the disruption and risk was just too great to the business, so we decided it was best to begin to look for another location. Our existing data center is on our headquarters campus, which is not the best place for the data center because it's inside one of our operation, our office complexes, and therefore we had water and other things running close to the data center, and it was just concerning about where the data center was located. And so we began to look for alternative places. We also were really fortunate in the timing of our data center review. HP was just beginning their build of the 6 big facilities that they ended up building or remodeling. And so we were able to get good HP internal expertise to help us as we were beginning our decision and of design and building our data center. So we really were fortunate to have internal experts give us some advice and counsel. We did look at co-location. We also looked at other buildings. We even looked at building another data center on our campus. The problem with co-location was that back in those days of 2006, 2007, and 2008, there was a premium for space. And so as we did our economics, it was just better for us to be able to build our own facility. And we were able to find land out northwest of San Antonio where several data centers have been built. And we began our own process of design and build a 20,000 square feet data center, 20,000 square feet of raised floor, and began our consolidation process.
And what was, in your opinion, more impactful, the planning, the execution, the migration? I guess the question should be, you know, what ended up being more challenging than you expected initially? Where do you think, in hindsight, you would put more energy and more planning if you had to do it over again?
I think we had to. If we look at the I think our approach was solid. We had a joint team of HP and Valero program management office, and I think that went really well the way that was managed. We had design teams. We had people from networking architecture, networking strategy, and from both HP and Valero, and that went really well. Our construction went well. We were fortunate we didn't have any bad weather or anything that slowed us down, so we were right on time and on budget. Probably the most complex was the migration, and we had special migration plans that was help. We got help from the migration team there at HP, and that was successful, but it took a lot of extra work. I think if we had one thing to do over again, we would probably change the way we did our IP renumbering. That was a very complex exercise, and we didn't start that soon enough. That was very difficult. Probably would have put more project managers on managing the project rather than using technical people to manage the project. Technical folks are really good at putting the technology in place, but they really struggle putting good, solid plans in place. But overall, I would say the migration was probably the most complex.
Hmm. Well, thank you for sharing that. Now, how old was the data center that you wanted to replace? So what sort of...
It was about 6 years old, 7 years old. And it had been remodeled once, but you have to realize Valero was in a growth mode, acquiring refineries. We now have 15 refineries, and we were consolidating quite a bit of equipment and applications back into San Antonio, and it just outgrew itself. And we were having a hard time keeping it redundant, keeping it cooled. It was built with 1 foot of raised floor, and it just didn't have, wasn't with all the mechanical inside the data center. We lost square footage.
Do you agree, John, that some of the variables, the factors that we discussed earlier in the podcast have changed, say, from just as few as 6 or 7 years ago?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Power and cooling has just become an enormous problem. And most of this because as you go through virtualization, blades and other technologies that you put in the data center just are run a little hotter, and they take up the extra power, and it's pretty complex to be able to balance your data center with cooling and power and also UPS and generators and things like that. It just becomes really complex.
Right.
And so building a new one really put us in the forefront.
Can you give us some sense of the metrics now that this has gone through and been completed? Are there some numbers that you can apply to this in terms of the payback and or the efficiency and productivity?
Well, not yet. I mean, we have seen some recent things that have happened here on campus to our old data center because of some weather and just some failures within the building. We've had some water leaks that have actually run into the data center floor. So that's a huge economics. If that would have flooded our production data center. So just things are beginning to. You can see the age of the data center beginning to have failures. We've had some air conditioner failures, some coolant leaking, and so it's just been a it's been a, I think our timing was just right. And even though we've been maintaining the old data center, things were just beginning to fail.
Yeah.
So we've been fortunate in that standpoint.
So certainly some initial business continuity benefits there.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Going back to Cliff Moore, did anything you hear from John Vann raise any light bulbs go off about what other people should be considering as they step up to the plate on these data center issues?
Well, he certainly should consult John's crystal ball regarding the issues he's had with his old data center and move quickly. Don't put it off, I would tell people. These things do happen, and they can be extremely costly when you look at the cost of downtime to the business.
Right. Now, getting started, we talked about migration. You know, it turns out we did another podcast that focused specifically on data center migration, and we can reference folks to that easily enough. What is it about planning, though, getting started, as you say, when people recognize that the time might not be on their side? What are some of the first and initial steps, and how might they look to HP for some guidance?
Well, we focus entirely on discovery early on. You've got to know precisely what you're going to move, exactly what it's going to look like half a year or a year from now when you actually move it, and focus very heavily on the dependencies between all of the various applications, especially the mission-critical applications. Typically, a move like John's requires multiple what we call move groups. John's company, had more than five or six, I believe it was, John. And you simply cannot divide your servers up into these move groups without knowing what you might break by dividing them up. And those dependencies are critical. And that's probably the biggest failing point.
Yeah, we have five move groups, and knowing what applications go with what was a real chore, and making sure that you have the right set of servers you can move on a particular weekend. And we also balanced it with downtime from the end customer, so we wanted to make sure that we were not in the middle of a refinery turnaround or a major closing. And so being able to balance those weekends so we had enough time to be able to make the migration work was quite a challenge.
And John Vann, did you take the opportunity to not only redesign and upgrade your data center facilities, but at the same time, did you perhaps modernize your infrastructure or your architecture? You said you did quite a bit with virtualization already. Was this sort of a double whammy in terms of the facilities as well as the architecture?
Yeah, we took the opportunity to upgrade the network architecture. We also took the opportunity to go further with our consolidation. So we just finished moving the servers from our refineries into San Antonio. So we took the opportunity to be able to do more consolidation, do more virtualization, and also upgrade our blade farm and just do a lot more work around improving the overall infrastructure for our applications.
Yeah, so I'd like to take that back to John Bennett. I imagine you're seeing that as well, that one of the ways that you can rationalize the cost of these is that you're not just taking and replacing, repaving a cow path, as it were. You're actually re-architecting and therefore getting a lot greater efficiency, not only from the new facility, but from the actual reconstruction of your architecture or the modernization and transformation of your architecture.
Yeah, well, there's several parts to that, right? And getting your hands around it, can really extend the sets of benefits you get from these kinds of projects, especially if you're making the kind of investment we're talking about in new data center facilities. Modernizing your infrastructure brings energy benefits in its own right. If you're doing it, enhances the benefits of your virtualization and consolidation activities. It can be a big step forward in terms of standardizing your IT environment, which is recommended by many of the industry analysts now in terms of preparing for automation or to, reduce management and maintenance costs. You blend it, you can go further and bring in application modernization and rationalization to take a hard look at your apps portfolio. And so you can really get these combined benefits and advantages that come from doing this. We certainly recommend people take a look at doing these things, and you can do them, if you do some of these things while you're doing the data center design and build, It can actually make your migration experience easier because what you can do is host, you know, your new systems in the new data center and be moving software and processes as opposed to having to stage and move servers and storage. It's a great opportunity. You know, John talked about dealing with the IP addresses, but, you know, the physical networking infrastructure in a lot of old data centers is a real hodgepodge grown organically over years. I guess you can blame some of our companies for having invented Ethernet a long time ago. It's a great chance to start off with a clean networking architecture, which also helps both with continuity and availability of services as well as cost. So they all come in there. And I actually have a question for John Vann as well, because they had a pretty strong focus around governance, and especially in handling change requests. And I'm hoping he might talk a little bit about that process of the design and build projects too, if he might.
Yeah, our goal was to hold scope down pretty to scope creep to a minimum. And so we had an approval process where it had to be a pretty good reason for a change for a server not to move. And so we fundamentally used the word no as much as we could to avoid not getting the right applications in the right place. So we had any kind of approval had to go through me, and then if I disagreed and they still wanted to escalate it, it went to my boss. So we had a pretty strong change management process.
Yeah, you laugh.
Yeah, no, I can see where that would be important right along the way, not something you want to think about later or adding on to the process, but something to set up right from the beginning. Okay, well, great. We've had a very interesting discussion about the movement in enterprise data centers where folks are doing a lot more transformation, moving and relocating their data centers, modernizing them, finding ways to eke out efficiencies, but also trying to reduce their risk of moving to the future and looking at those all-important power and energy consumption issues as well. I want to thank our guests. We've been joined today by Cliff Moore, America's PMO lead for Critical Facilities Consulting at HP. Thank you, Cliff.
Thanks, Dana. Thanks, everybody.
And John Bennett, Worldwide Director, Data Center Transformation Solutions at HP. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Dana.
And lastly, John Vann, Vice President, Technical Infrastructure and Operations at Valero Energy Corporation. John, we really appreciate your frankness and sharing your experience, and we certainly wish you well in that.
No, thank you very much, Dana. Appreciate it.
This is Dana Gardner, Principal Analyst at Inter Arbor Solutions. You've been listening to a sponsored Briefings Direct podcast. Thanks for listening, and come back next time.